Welcome to a special roundtable discussion of Media Impressions, where we revisit the topic of artificial intelligence in our industry and lives. Joining our roundtable host and CTO, Connor Elliott, are developers Hank Mushinsky, John McCabe, and Tim McWilliams, search manager Melanie Bransky, associate media director Rich Harmelin, Greg Ebeck, our VP of Business Intelligence, and special guest, founder and CEO, Joanne Harmelin.
So I thought maybe I could start by asking you, Joanne, you bring it up to me more often than pretty much anybody else, asking you what you've read recently or what's on your mind recently as it relates to AI.
Well, when I think of AI, I think of it in two contexts. One is the broad context of the future for all of us, rather how it relates to work is only one part of it, how it relates to our whole lot, all of our lives going forward and our future generations. And it is both amazing and scary in my book. Many of the skills that are being performed by people are going to be performed by algorithms, basically sort of offering a little bit of an insurance policy to people so that they are multi-skilled and across many channels. So give them a little bit of insurance in terms of job security as we continue to develop more and more efficient ways of doing business and creating more and more software to make the company run more efficiently. What we're doing, other companies out there are doing as well. So this is going to impact us going forward more and more. I'm trying to look to the future to make sure as many people as possible are as educated as possible in as many areas as possible to offer them job security and also to make them more valuable, not just to us, but should they ever go anywhere else, they'll be very valuable as well. Obviously, that's not my goal that they go somewhere else, but I am trying to. I'm looking at the human capital. I'm more interested in the human capital, even though AI is not really human capital. But I do think AI is going to impact us. It's already impacting us. I mean, Tesla's just one little example. We need to focus on that and see what we think in this company and maybe out there in the general world, how AI is going to impact us and what can we do about it.
John, if you wanted to kind of give us your spin and thought on that kind of people-centric way that we approach some of the technology solutions we look at.
Sure. I think there's definitely that ever-present fear of the robots are coming to take our jobs. But I like to look at the sunny side of how much more productive we can be with a little bit of AI on the side, and how that AI is good at catching, one class of problems where human creativity is much better at solving, harder problems. And so I'm excited to, see those two work hand in hand and, make the people that we have now just, 10 times as effective as before.
Yeah, Greg, you probably experience this a lot as well.
When I'm out on the front lines talking to our clients, it's positioned very much as this technology can do your job better, right? And that's alienating to people. It encourages them to keep their distance. And I think in some ways it fosters an unhealthy competition. But if you embrace John's concept of this productivity-based angle, and Scott says it all the time, let's automate the work that people don't want to do. We can find things that are highly logical, that are low value, and we shift not just the company, but also our employees' perspective and their purpose to making the most of the time they have. Like, that's a stronger positioning, I think, for this technology. And I think all too often that gets lost because of how it's branded, how it's marketed, and frankly, how distant the people who are selling it are from the actual tools themselves.
Yeah. And to that point, I think, Mel is a great example. I mean, Mel lives in this space every day. And Mel, how long have you been at Harmelin? And how much have you seen change even in that time as it relates to using technology to get the job done?
Oh, yeah. So I've been with Harmelin, I want to say 6.5 years now, somewhere in that range. And I started on the search team and I have seen Google presents changes every day. And Search Ads 360 does a lot of the AI automation. And Google is maybe one of the leading companies to kind of push forward with AI in the digital activation space. So there's I think there's been 2-3 changes this year already, and it's February. And with a lot of these things, I remember things that used to take me hours to send out to clients a couple of years ago. Hank created, there's this wonderful tool we made for the search team called the Prettifier that has saved hours. Like I couldn't tell you hundreds of hours of work in that, which has allowed us to put our time into other things. So I 100% see the fear behind this, but at the same time, being somebody that has had to do those things manually and no longer has to, I think we've made phenomenal strides already.
And Mel, on that, to that point, like one of the phenomenons that I've experienced, there's a lot of like, I think it's natural for that anxiety leading up to like handing over something that you had manually done before, been a large part of your duties before, to then, to then operate through a computer or whatever it might be. What's that like? Because one of my observations is once you become comfortable with it, you forget immediately that you ever valued that work, and you absorb that as now like the expected, I expect this to take 10 seconds.
It's been proven to work. So I think, Connor, to your point, there is that level of apprehension. I know there's people on my team that have been in search for over 10 years that see AI as our impending doom and us losing our jobs. But at the same time, if it's kind of what will help to be able to look at the broader picture and at clients' goals and all of those other larger, more holistic, pretty things, then I think it's great.
Yeah. Tim, I think, built a tool or built an app for the search team that kind of supplements some of the work that Google does. Tim, I think it's your n-gram analysis. You want to talk a little bit about the n-gram analysis and what you do and how it works for search and how that helps the search team?
Yeah, sure. So AI is, to me, it's sort of like an umbrella term, right? There's AI, which is basically any technique that enables computers to mimic human interactions, right? And then inside of AI, you have machine learning, and then inside machine learning, you have deep learning. And there's different flavors of machine learning, and the Search Engrams app or analysis utilizes it's called NLP, natural language processing, and it's just a form of machine learning that, you know, mines a bunch of text. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, sure, we can theoretically say that we've already deployed a AI solution.
Yeah, so Hank, some of the stuff that Tim's doing, is taking a data set and building an AI, a need-based AI tool. But I think when we get into this compounding and, that feedback loop that Tim's talking about, how do you think about the opportunity for our business as far as like the data that we have available to us and, future opportunities to be able to build more self-sustaining solutions?
AI in car driving applications, for example, take in vast amounts of data from every piece of the machine, steering wheel position and rotational velocity and wheel slip sensors and object recognition, in the road. And each of those pieces is like its own AI, its own little robot that then feeds up to like the larger brain, right? But the thing that distinguishes that is that there's this feedback loop that has real world consequences. The car turns its steering wheel 1 degree and then it senses that in all of its other inputs, right? And you can do this in media too. Digital or programmatic buying platforms, depending on which algorithms they use, have this feedback loop whereby what it tries, it bids on a given it bids on a given ad. And it knows certain parameters. It can feel through the internet things about the recipient, and then the feedback comes in the form of site interactions or sales or whatever you've optimized it for. And then it goes and bids again and again and again and again, and it constantly is able to update its model as it interacts with the world and as it experiences. Similar to how animals or people learn via experience. In our business, there is opportunity for things like this, for things like self-driving cars, if you will, which I think is part of what Joanne, you pointed out, scares you. But at the same time, if we can come to feel that certain aspects of our jobs are less dignified and more like painfully routine, right? Mm-hmm. We can come to feel that about more complex arrangements as well. I can't believe that I have to build this entire campaign manually. Wouldn't it be great if I could come up with some broad idea-based terms and then have this generate giant portions of this, what was formerly a large routine activity, for us to then go curate and manage. This is a thing that could exist. And these type feedback loops that give you the return data are there for us, especially on these digital buying platforms, especially on these bidding platforms that do billions of interactions a day.
That, Hank, is exactly what I am thinking. But taking it a step beyond is that a machine becomes a Hank or a John or a Tim. And gets to the point where instead of the narrow intelligence, gets to general intelligence so that they are on the same par as us. And that machines basically take over many of the functions that people are doing. Things that we do, drive, go food shopping, et cetera, and all of that could be automated. But where that will leave us as a species, I guess, that is a bit concerning.
You know, if we bring this back to that, like to the individual, we bring this back into Harmland Media. We think about, you know, where we are and how we can work in this context. You know, I think that we're doing a lot of work as a business ourselves, organizing our data, trying to prepare ourselves to you know, leverage these technologies to our own benefit. I think we have the right mindset on that, and I think that the other aspect of it is our client. There's a constant influx of interest and inquiry into us helping our clients navigate this space.
I think if you frame it right, this technology is the same pursuit it's always been. We're trying to surface more and more complex information faster. Even in the Tesla example, the car is trying to communicate with you the road conditions so it can keep you on the road, right? We're communication professionals, and maybe that isn't something that people think about on a day-to-day basis, but, you know, regardless of where you fit at Harmland Media, our job is to communicate on behalf of our clients with their potential customers. And, you know, there's a lot that machine learning can do to help us dissect all those signals and understand those endpoints. But the data we feed it comes from humans. The machines that are built are built by our assumptions on what's going on. And so whatever comes out the other end still needs a little bit of interpretation. And so, like, that's really where I see our clients coming to us and putting the onus on us to add the value. It's not the technology itself. It's using it effectively.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's AI is very much a buzzword. It's a buzzword that probably gets abused and maybe over, you know, and extended into areas that just, you know, for sales purposes, just like, you know, 7-8 years ago, the word big data was all the rage. I think that AI represents something slightly different. It's not just a sales tactic. It represents a trend that's happening. It's, you know, that we're experiencing in our personal lives, that we're experiencing in our professional lives. You know, I think that a lot of, to what Tim was saying, is, you know, AI being an umbrella term, and then you have these different levels of machine learning, deep learning, and what those mean and their applications and how we experience them, is becoming more and more invisible to us. You know, that we're real, things that are happening that, you know, we're not realizing that it's happening, and it's driven by an algorithm, or it's driven by a neural net, or it's driven by some machine learning. We have to, as we think about our business and we think about how our clients we're working with our clients, we're also have to think about the generational shift that's happening in the tooling, and the habits and behaviors, and what those, you know, what that like baseline expectation is as far as being, you know, how productive someone is and how they access information, how they share information. And you can start to think about, like, you know, getting access to information today is so much different than it was before. Just like maybe generating information today is so much different than it is before. That's right. And I'm excited by it. But I also see that other side of it where, you know, the change rate, you know, and like it's not necessarily consistent with, you know, you're not just always adding new people in at the same rate that people, you know, that people are leaving out the other side. So it's, you know, there's this constant sense of change for our business, constant sense of opportunity that needs to be embraced and you know, we need to manage through it. So I like, Tim, I wanted you to talk a little bit about, you know, bias in AI and how you've seen that or what you've read about that as being something that we have to consider as we think about the impact.
All these AI, ML algorithms have been around for decades. All these mathematical computations have been around for years and have proven. And the thing that makes everything possible is the computer. You know, it allows us to, you know, computationally power everything. Going into biases, they're still human coding up the algorithm and inserting their own bias into the algorithm. And, you know, where is that data coming from? The data is, you know, some shape or form being imported or inputted by humans. So that data is also biased towards the human. So, you know, as we use AI, as Connor said, it's reflecting ourselves because we're creating that. So it's, you know, inevitably going to reflect ourselves in general.
You know, that's such a very good point, Tim. I actually never really focused on that, but you're absolutely right. And I think the same point that John made about reading all these books, what books are they reading? You know, because that can give them inherent bias depending on what they've read, because it's just data to AI. And so how they interpret that data is crucial. So that's a really, really interesting and very, very good point about bias.
And Joanne, I'll just build on Tim's point there about bias, because it's really interesting if you dig into it. That's the danger of just adding a tool to your stack. You know, when our clients want to go and add a CDP or they want to invest in some visualization software, like, I mean, that's great. And we've done that. We have Tableau. But when you don't have a team like we have with Hank and John, Tim and the rest of the group to help you understand like what's really happening there, then you're just taking orders from someone else's biases and you really don't know what these things are driving towards. You know, when we talk about automating a buy and click button in SPMS and you get a TV buy, like functionally, yeah, you do. But the decisioning that goes into that, the prioritization of the different components, you know, that's based off of something. And if you don't understand what that something is, then, you know, that's where your value, that's where your opportunity really gets cut off at the knees, because how do you add to that? All you can do is react to it. And I think that's probably the biggest risk to a lot of our staff is you don't want to become someone who delivers an output. Like that's the worst position to be in. So as long as you can add a little bit more, there's something you can bring to the table beyond what's delivered, then you're good. But if you just start taking orders, that's what we need to guard against. That's what I think we need to educate people on. And no one wants to be that person. So it shouldn't be too hard to start that conversation.
Yeah. I don't know who coined the phrase garbage in, garbage out, but I think that's where bias may come into it. But that's a really, really, really good point that you all brought out, because it's not something that I ever focused on as I thought of AI, because somehow in my mind I felt AI was neutral, but it's not neutral. It's not neutral. It really depends on the information and data that it absorbs and how it interprets that data.
If Tesla's Model is getting fed crappy data, your automatic pilot's not going to drive correctly. You know, garbage in, garbage out, then you're going to crash, maybe, if it's reading bad data, if the sensor is failing or something like that. So, you know, it's biased in many ways.
Or even the, was it the Mars Pathfinder, where they had everything programmed perfectly, except the whole thing was in meters instead of miles, and into the surface you go. Sometimes context is key.
If you could see AI implemented for our business, you know, what would it do? Mel, I'm going to ask you to start. You know, what you see it every day, but you know, if something, maybe it could help you, or maybe you could just, it's something even bigger. I'll let you fill in.
So this is going to be really specific to my job, being on the search team, we are the only department, I believe, that actually writes creative for Harmelin. And this is something that I have discussed with, I believe, Connor and Hank at various points. There's an ad copy wishlist tool that we have where essentially we as humans are still writing all of the copy on our own. Connor, I'm sorry, what was the process that you were talking about earlier, the new AI that was developed?
GPT-3.
GPT-3. So if GPT-3 was able to crawl our clients' websites and spit out ad copy for us, and all we would have to do is kind of glance it over, say, does this make sense? Is this correct to the goals? Oh, no, let me choose this one instead and kind of go through that way. It eliminates a lot of time and also human error, because everyone, when we type out the ad copy, there's a chance we type out with a spelling bias or a, you know, Oxford comma or something really like completely unnecessary like that. So from a very specific level, I think that even just getting words from the website in front of us a little bit faster can help. And I think that that is something that there is still a human element necessary to review this. So there's no way that we would just post that right up there. But I think that it's a decent starting point.
Right on. Rich.
Yeah.
You've been quietly sitting in the corner.
Yes, I have. Listening.
What if you could have an AI do something for us, for a client, for you, what would it be?
I would like to create a Gregifier where I could like speak to Alexa and tell it like what I'm trying to say, and then it'll make it in like way nicer, cooler sounding terms in like a Greg type of way. And then I could just have it say that to the client.
Way to steal my idea, Rich.
You're going to have something that makes you sound like you?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, if we're being serious, you have 15 years worth of emails that I've written to various prompts. We have 5 or 6 years worth of Teams exchanges. If I were truly to embrace this future we're all talking about, what would happen if we took all of my communications, dumped them in, and gave it some prompts to see how the Greg bot might answer? Like, you know, we talk about finding other people who can do these things. That's something we could try.
Yeah, I mean, I say that obviously a little bit facetiously, because I think like the little things like that for AI are like so cool and funny, but on like a real term, like from a BI standpoint, where myself, Greg, Chelsea have written scopes for clients. I'm sure we have any number of scopes out there, but something like that where you could crawl the scopes and be like, what is like the common language that we use for, you know, for different types of things that we're doing in scopes? Sure. And maybe not give you a fully polished finished scope, but like spit out templates that are a little, that only need a little bit of massaging, rather than trying to regurgitate very similar scopes for very similar projects all the time.
I think truthfully, like the, when you ask about like what do I want from AI, or like what product would I make? I don't know. I mean, maybe I should go for the general intelligence, right? Let me just make HankBot. It can replace everything I do, and then I can just fall asleep.
Focus on skateboarding.
I don't know. There's like a level of automation that would probably make everybody's life easier, but the question of what it's all for, you know, as you've been asking this whole time, Joanne, is really, it bugs me.
Well, therein lies the political question. If we all get to that point, Hank, where we basically have replaced ourselves in the work world, we still need to eat and do those things. I mean, maybe we would just all grow our own food. We would actually revert maybe to the early days of man.
What do you got, John?
I got kind of like a serious one, and then I just want to address that Rich and Greg stole my idea, but there's a twist. So just before this meeting, I was thinking like, what could we do? And instead of taking Greg's emails, I was thinking, what if we got every email we've ever received from every and any client, and then started to do analysis and tagging on like, oh, what kind of question was it? Like, what did we then like? Some, and then kind of like build a model of the types of questions we get asked. But then the much more attainable thing, I think, would be to look at the data that we're building ourselves in Blueprint, and really just take the time to like look deep into it and see if we can, you know, find insights there in our own backyard. Because then, like Hank was saying before, the feedback loop, we can go make a change that's going to then impact the data, and then we'll just get better and better, faster and faster.
Tim, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback off what John said and utilize Blueprint. There's going to be a lot of data that gets stored in there. And I was actually talking to him 2 days ago or yesterday about, for each plan, brief, and buy, we collect data. And what if it would be maybe interesting to cluster that data together across various clients and see like what's similar between all of our buys and all of our plans and all of our briefs between all the clients. And as you like, you know, go through and edit those, the clusters will change.
Jared, since you chimed in,
yes,
you're now on the list.
That's not fair. I haven't been thinking along the lines of what I would want.
Well, Joanne, what's on your list? What would you like to see have happen?
The two things that I mentioned, the bias and the ethics, are of importance to me and I think to the company and what we stand for. And that relates to many things, you know, how we treat employees, how we hire, those kinds of things. And that's a more broad-based use of how we handle AI. But the individual needs are more related to what each of you do and what you want and whether or not we can implement those things. Some of them are more high in the sky, I guess. But we thought that about a lot of things 3 years ago, and a lot of it has come to fruition. So if it's worth going for, then I say go for it, you know. So that's how I think. I like to think ahead. I like to think progressively, and I will continue to do that, even though I'm old. But I'm still young of brain and young of heart. So, but I am interested in us continuing to pursue AI in a compassionate and smart way. Obviously, we have a business to run. I understand that, and our clients do as well. And how we use AI in accomplishing all those things is important.
I thought of one for you.
Okay.
We have years worth of IT emails to a ticketing system. Well, how about we take a look at that? And when someone emails or we have a chat bot, which I'm sure everyone here has experienced this in real life, dealing with a bank or some other company, you know, and you type in your problem and then you say, oh, well, have you tried this? And then, no, oh, we'll try that. And obviously everything ends with, have you rebooted? And then when that doesn't work, then you can then talk to somebody.
Well, I think this has been great. I think that this has been, you know, it's been interesting. I think it's thought provoking. I also think, you know, the way I think about where we are and where we're going, I share John's outlook on, you know, I like to look for the positive side of things and believe that we can find value, we can extract value, we can apply these technologies and these, you know, advanced algorithms and all use all this data for the good. And I want to believe that it can inspire people to, you know, to want to work here, to, you know, want to work with our clients to solve problems. You know, I know that I understand it's an intimidating concept, but I think the work that this team is doing, the work that we're doing as a business is trying to lower the barrier of entry. To welcome more people into the space, prove that it's safe, it's exciting, it's, you know, it's fulfilling. So, you know, I see there as an immense amount of opportunities. If I were to answer the question myself, I would like to see us build a recommendation engine for a blueprint, you know, where we put in some parameters and based on our historical delivery, we get some idea of like based on, you know, this client, this industry, this time of year, you know, here's some ideas on, you know, here's some instant something to react to that can help shape that next step. You know, something that would have otherwise taken a lot of time and research to drudge up. I would love to see us just even provide a recommendation, you know, to start and maybe warm people up to the idea that like these computers and sophistication can help. So, yeah, I think this has been great. I really, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to do it. Joanne, thank you for the early morning. Nothing like getting up at 8 a.m. to talk about artificial intelligence. So
it's a very interesting subject to me. And I thank all of you for your contributions, not just today, but every day.
Alrighty.
Thank you to all of our roundtable participants. Media Impressions is hosted by Greg Ebeck and produced by Gwen Lufkin, Emily Wolf, Chelsea Fletcher, and me, Jared Rudenstein. Harmelin Media, named Ad Age Best Places to Work 2021, thanks you for listening to Episode 5 of Media Impressions.